Hi, this is John Schaefer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC is supported by the Metropolitan Museum, presenting concerts, curator talks, and lectures with Patti Smith, Tango, Sharon Isbin, Christine Ebersole, and others. 212-570-3949 or metmuseum.org/tickets.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of the
world music is ready for a remix. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer, and on the show today, world music in the age of social networking. And later, soul jazz saxophonist Lou Donaldson shares classic recordings from a six-decade career in music. But first, Paul Simon's Graceland captures the classic sound of world music. But this group is the new sound of world music, version 2.0. In recent years, the sound that many of us associate with world music, that Paul Simon, Ladysmith Black Mambazo sound, has received a makeover. Acts from India, Japan, even this group from Bavaria, called Schlachthof Bronx, are using MySpace, Twitter, and YouTube to distribute their music. Meanwhile, a supergroup called Pangea is doing it old school. This group recently released their debut single, a multilingual pop song that they hope will be a cross-cultural hit. Joining us by phone to explain the story of Pangea is Wall Street Journal reporter Ethan Smith. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I have to say that, you know, with all these little groups, we're going to talk a bit about world music version 2.0, that this Pangea project seems to be really almost old-fashioned. What is it and who's behind it?
Well, as you said, it's sort of a super group involving a band from New York who's kind of the least known quantity, mm-hmm. Called Flying Machines, and then King Sunny Ade, Khaled, who is big in the Arab world and France, a Chinese pop singer named Cheng Lin, and a Bollywood singer.
Kailash Kher.
Kailash Kher, right.
Right.
They have this song that's they've done one song which they recorded in L.A. earlier this year that's this kind of multilingual, global party kind of song that was put together by this very unlikely, the team that put it together is just as unlikely as the band. this kind of colorful character named Bassam Abdallah, who, born in Lebanon, made his fortune manufacturing and selling dry goods in Central Africa, he kind of connected with these entertainment types from LA and decided he wanted to fund this kind of border crossing musical project, and they sought out these artists and
presumably paid them enough to get them to come together.
I think flew them here, put them up at the Beverly Hilton and threw them into the studio together.
This is no We Are the World. This is meant as a profit-making entity, I'm guessing. First of all, who knew that there was a fortune to be made in dry goods in the Central African Republic? But apparently this industrialist from Lebanon was aware enough to do just that.
Well, I think his father was the visionary on that. He the the father started the business, and I mean it's a separate company that Bassam runs, but I mean he's a really interesting guy.
Okay, well, King Sunny Ade, I mean this guy was one of the first names, you know, when people started talking about world music in the 70s, you know.
Right.
He was one of the early kings. Kailash Kher, who's been on Soundcheck recently, as you say, you know, a hot young Bollywood singer. So they've gone cross-cultural, cross-generational, and they've put together this song called Citizens of the World. Let's hear a little bit of what we're talking about. That is a group called Pangea, and the song is Citizens of the World. It's their only song so far. A who's who of world music singers representing West Africa, King Sunny Ade, representing South Asia, Kailash Kher, representing the Arabic world, the Algerian Rai singer known as Khaled, and representing East Asia, the Chinese singer Cheng Lin. And we're speaking with Ethan Smith from the Wall Street Journal on the phone with us. And Ethan, it's to me, it sounds like the unholy love child of the Gypsy Kings' Bombolero and Barry Manilow's Copacabana. I mean, what are they really looking to do with this song?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it hit the nail on the head with Bombolero. I mean, I think they're explicitly looking at the Gypsy Kings as the kind of blueprint here.
Mm-hmm. They want that kind of global attention.
Yeah. I mean, they want it to be the song that, you know, you could kind of hear in a cafe virtually anywhere in the world. You know, you said earlier you assume they're doing this for profit. If they are, I don't know exactly what the business model is. I mean, it's not like the proceeds are going to charity, but I'm not exactly clear on how many proceeds there necessarily will be, you know, unless the thing totally catches fire and they sell a bazillion iTunes downloads. But, I mean, even that, I mean, they have one song. You know, it's just the single is not a very profitable vehicle.
Well, they also did a video for the single with the four of them plus this New York-based rock band, all
right,
on top of the Capitol Records building
in
L.A. How involved is Capitol Records here?
They're not that involved. The Flying Machines are signed to a label that's distributed by EMI, but you know, and they recorded the song at Capitol Studios, and I think they got the permission to film on the roof there because of a personal relationship between Spencer Proffer, who produced the song and manages Flying Machines, and some senior EMI executive.
All right. Well,
but they're not. I don't think EMI is involved in distributing the song.
So far, it's pretty much been iTunes is the way that people have been getting
it. It's on
it.
iTunes, and I think they're looking at some kind of distribution arrangement, possibly with Universal or another big record label internationally. But as far as I know, at least the last time I asked them about it, that was still kind of just in the, you know, potentially in the works.
All right. Now, Ethan, the fact that somebody went through all the time and effort and cost to put all these singers together, you know, to create this kind of musical Colors of Benetton thing, what does it say about the state of world music in the year 2010?
Well, it says that at least one pretty rich guy is still interested in it. It's true. To me, it's just far from obvious that, you know, the world is the way it was, whatever, you know, 20, 30 years, 25 years ago, whenever the Gypsy Kings came out with Bambaleo. I mean, there just aren't these kind of unified media channels where you can make a song a hit, you know, in one country, let alone every country. I mean, you mean
because the marketplace has been so fragmented by satellite and social networking and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just the idea of making a song ubiquitous is a very big challenge now that people can kind of burrow into their, you know, into their niches. I mean, this is kind of the irony of the web. It's, you know, it's worldwide, but everybody, you know, has the ability to kind of fine-tune their own reality and, you know, dial up a Pandora station that just, you know, plays whatever kind of music they're into or whatever. And, you know, it's actually a more difficult proposition to create a global hit like that.
Well, and I
not
think
to say it's impossible, but
we'll see if Pangea is the one to do it. We've been speaking with Ethan Smith from the Wall Street Journal about this Pangea song called Citizens of the World. And as Ethan was saying, you know, the fragmenting of the marketplace, is it possible to even have a global number one hit along the lines of the old Gypsy King song these days? Well, in a moment, we'll continue our conversation along just those lines as we talk about the new world music version 2.0. And later still on the program, jazz saxophonist Lou Donaldson joins us to reflect on a six-decade career in music. That's ahead on Soundcheck.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
I'm simply not interested in seeing rich producers manufacturing world music supergroups. I'd rather hear someone like Isabaga Yogo, a Malian musician who runs his own studio and offers local musicians access to technology. The sounds are messy and rough, but it's also the unmediated sound of a people's music as it evolves.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We were just hearing about a musical supergroup trying to create a massive global hit, but many of today's world musicians are just trying to get heard. And a new type of world music is emerging. Ethnomusicologist Wayne Marshall refers to it as World Music Version 2.0. Wayne maintains the music blog Wayne and Wax, and he joins us on the phone to tell us all about it. Wayne Marshall, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
You heard before we were talking about this band Pangea. What do you think about that kind of effort?
Well, my reaction really mirrored yours quite strongly, I'd say. It also seemed kind of like old-fashioned or old-school, if you will, a sort of vision of world music that, you know, we could have heard any time in the last 20 years or so, and something that, you know, it did strike me as a little bit overcooked, as opposed to, you know, unvarnished.
In the sort of netherworld or relative netherworld of social networking, do you find world music these days that is only maybe half cooked? And is that more interesting than the overcooked stuff?
Sure. I mean, in fact, you find things that are quite raw in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a new set of listeners out there who are more interested in those kinds of sounds than some of these, focus grouped kinds of projects that have defined world music for a couple decades now. But yeah, I mean, the world is just crawling with all kinds of music these days.
So when you use a term like world music version 2.0, what does that specifically mean? What sort of distinguishes it from the world music that we grew up with, listening to people like David Byrne and Peter Gabriel and Paul Simon?
Yes, so it's part of it's a recognition that a lot of this music that we might think about under that label is emerging through the technologies of Web 2.0, as they call it, these socially networked media sharing sites, things like YouTube or MySpace or iMeme, that have really allowed a much more unfettered access to music being produced all over the place. Recognizing that there are still plenty of asymmetries of access to the internet and so forth. It's still quite amazing the amount of stuff that's out there. So it's sort of recognizing that we live in a new world. We live in a world which is increasingly online and interconnected, and oftentimes in a more direct or even peer-to-peer manner than that which was sold to us under the name world music previously, where you really had a sort of a high level of mediation, either mm-hmm. being performed by a star like David Byrne or Paul Simon or a record label that was really seeking to market that kind of stuff to a Western audience.
All right, so it sounds like you're saying that the new world music, the artists themselves are more in control of the tools of making and distributing the music. But what about the music itself? I mean, if we listen to someone like the Zaza Twins,
mm-hmm.
how does this sound different from what, world music fans 20 years ago would have recognized?
Right. Well, I mean, I'd love to hear what you and your listeners think of that question. But for me, I mean, you listen to the Zaza Twins, who are a couple of teenagers living in Paris or in the Parisian suburbs, and are making contemporary dance music for themselves and for their peers. And I suspect for a lot of listeners, it's just going to sound like what they would call techno or something like that. In fact, if you listen a little closer, you can hear patterns in the snare drums that are nodding to a genre like coupe décalé, which is a fairly popular dance music in Côte d'Ivoire and other parts of Francophone Africa. But when you listen to the other parts of the arrangement, the sort of trancey synthesizer loops, here you see these young Parisian kids also listening to everything else around them, including French techno.
So are the Zaza Twins are they from an African family living outside of Paris?
Yes, I believe they both are. To be honest, I don't know enough about them to give you the detail on that. But yeah, they're part of, the fairly sizable, African migrant community, second and third generation as well, who live in the Parisian suburbs. And of course, Paris has been the sort of center for world music and African music for a long time, just based on being such a metropolitan center.
Mm-hmm.
But kids like the Zaza Twins, I mean, I just think they have a very different target audience in mind. They're not producing for people over here necessarily. They're producing for themselves and their peers.
Let's hear a little bit.
This, sure.
The Zaza Twins from a collection called Logo B. From just outside Paris, the Zaza Twins, an example of world music 2.0. And as Wayne Marshall was just telling us, you know, to some listeners, that's not going to sound like world music. It's going to sound like techno. But knowing that, you know, there's this kind of African flavor to it, that there's African heritage among the musicians and stuff, that in itself, Wayne, is not so different from, you know, things that we've heard before. How is this music getting out there? How are the Zaza Twins dispersing this music to other people?
That's a great question. That's actually quite central, I think, to what makes this a bit different. The way that they put their music out is simply by putting it on their blog. In this case, they tend to use a sort of locally popular platform in France called Skyrock, which is, you know, akin to MySpace or Fotolog, which is a similar thing popular in Latin America. But, you know, they just share their tracks more or less for free, and that's their way of, you know, participating in a local phenomenon there. But one of the things about these so-called 2.0 web platforms is that they're also public by default. So the Zaza Twins puts that out there, but then also, you know, enthusiastic DJs and bloggers in London or New York or Montreal might pick up on it and see that within this kind of emerging electronic world sort of formation, even if the Zaza Twins themselves wouldn't necessarily call it world music.
So the idea that they could release a song on their blog one day and literally a couple of days later there could be a completely different remix of their song Half a World Away, that's the speed at which this is all evolving.
Yes, or you know, another way that it sort of enters into those kinds of circuits of participation would be, you know, dozens of dance videos cropping up of kids around the Francophone world or even beyond dancing to their song. And that's sort of the new media ecology of this stuff, that it's not exactly part of the old industry model, the commercial model, but there are other sort of values motivating why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. What would some of those values be?
Well, the joys and thrills of participation and of seeing your creation go somewhere and take on new life somewhere and animate other people moving to it and so forth. And sure, I mean some of these young producers also might have ambitions of making music into a livelihood, but you know, in that instance they face the same challenges that anybody does today.
We're speaking with Wayne Marshall, ethnomusicologist and Mellon Fellow at MIT. He's on the line with us. We're talking about the new breed of world music. Why don't we take a step back? This term world music, I mean, what distinguishes that from just the traditional music of any part of the world? I mean, it on its face, world music is a very silly term.
Yes, and, you know, it arose at a particular moment in history. I mean, it had been more or less around, thrown about here and there, but with some other synonyms, things like traditional music or tribal music or even things that today would strike us as a little bit maybe even offensive, things like primitive music. In those cases, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, usually to describe ethnographic field recordings that had been made by anthropologists and ethnomusicologists, it wasn't until the 1980s when a consortium of record labels got together, actually in 1987 in Britain, and fastened on this name as a way of marketing both traditional but also increasingly sort of popular dance forms and fusions of those forms with Western rock and pop as a way of, you know, creating a category, creating a label, a market that they could sell to more easily, finding that a lot of their wares were just not really finding bins in record stores back when we had record stores.
I remember those days. Now, we heard before from this sort of manufactured new group called Pangea. One of the members is King Sunny Ade, and we can actually go back to one of his own recordings. This is kind of he was one of the first world music, sort of cross-cultural music figures to get some serious attention in the press and among listeners here in the States. This is an example of old-school world music.
Dance, 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 dance away your sorrow. Dance, dance, dance. Dance away your sorrow. Such is life. Take it like that. Walk and pray. Never
break their rules. Such is life, take it like that. Walk and pray, never break their rules.
From Nigeria, that is King Sunny Ade with Dance, Dance, Dance. So if that's world music version 1.0, here's a little bit of world music version 2.0, a track from Mexico's DJ Tito. That is DJ Tito in a song called 20 MSN Mambo Reggaeton, Funny Mix. And oh, go ahead, Wayne.
Well, I was just going to say, those are actually kind of an interesting pairing, right? Because you've got King Sunny Ade singing Dance, 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 Dance Away Your Sorrows, and you've got DJ Tito splicing in what I assume is a reggaeton vocalist saying, get low, move it, slow. I mean, more or less the same topic, but obviously aesthetically they probably couldn't sound more different to a lot of listeners there.
Well, the first, sort of generation of world music you mentioned before, a lot of it was influenced by Western pop, rock music. It seems like version 2.0 much more influenced by hip-hop and especially DJ culture in the remix.
Yes, absolutely. And in that sense, there's a way in which there's much less attention to sort of ideas about sort of the authentically local, right? So what's underpinning DJ Tito's song are samples from Puerto Rican reggaeton, Dominican merengue mambo, but also the Microsoft Messenger sound, that little bududum, bududum, that's running through the whole thing. And this guy's making music in Monterrey, Mexico, right? So, I mean, none of those things would necessarily, they're not trying to signal Monterrey in any way. Of course, King Sunny Ade's music is very grounded in juju from Nigeria. I mean, that doesn't mean that you don't hear pedal steel guitar coming in from time to time. Of course, that is heard locally in Nigeria as, perfectly, fair game at this point. But yeah, part of it is that it's much more been influenced by remix culture, by hip-hop and reggae and other genres that are fairly open and omnivorous when it comes to what the sound sources might be.
So when we began this segment, it was with an artist called KS20, but a Japanese artist, but entirely, sort of building on the sounds of Brazil, of funk carioca, and things like that. So it really, you have artists who are no longer bound geographically or through technology to their hometown or even their homeland. Does that mean you can find world music now in the United States?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that for me, that's a really nice way of drawing this line in a sense. And I should say first that I've been using this rubric of world music to describe the emergence of all these different sorts of remix cultures from around the world. But few of these artists would probably self-identify that way. One of the reasons I like using the term is that, for one, it does make us recognize it as a global phenomenon, but also it allows us maybe to have a sort of critical take of sorts with regard to what used to travel under that name. So for me, the fact that a lot of these blogs and DJs and emerging record labels who are interested in all of these different sort of remix musics from around the world, that they would include alongside, funk carioca from Rio or kuduro from Brazil or logobi from Paris, a genre like juke out of Chicago is very interesting, right? I mean, because previously under the banner of world music, you'd never see something from the United States, never mind a sort of urban electronic form. But there's a sense to me in which this world 2.0 world is one that's very decentered in a way, that the world is not something out there that we can access on this nice warm recording and have our pastoral sort of fantasies, but the world is right here, right around us, especially if we live in contemporary urban cosmopolitan cities.
So DJ Elmo, a good example of Chicago juke, and as Wayne Marshall is telling us, juke itself, part of this world music version 2.0 scene that is developing sort of underneath the pop charts and on social networking sites. It's a really fascinating phenomenon that looks like it'll probably produce something at some point that sort of, you know how these things go, Wayne, they sort of like mushrooms after a storm. One of these people will have a breakthrough, and then suddenly everybody will be looking at this. But for the moment, thank you, Wayne, for leading us here and playing some of this music for us.
Thanks for giving me some time to share it with you.
Wayne Marshall is an ethnomusicologist and blogger, and joined us from MIT, where he is a Mellon Fellow. And here is a little bit of DJ Elmo. And still to come, touring stories and more music history from jazz saxophone veteran Lou Donaldson. That's next on Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.